Welcome to the Big Black Clock Podcast, the wrist-tickling world of urology, brought to you by the dynamic duo of two Montreal watch enthusiasts.
Enjoy dad jokes and bed puns as we deep dive into new releases, trends, reviews, and everything watch-related. Now sit back and rest assured you'll have a good time.
Welcome back, everybody, to our most amazing podcast.
Yes, which I think there's some changes coming, right? There's revamps coming where we're evolving, I feel, right?
It's possible. It's very possible. I've heard of that as well. I got the memo.
Either that or a little drunk. Man, just a little buzzed. But it's been a while since we've been away, so I think we need to apologize to everyone about that. I think it's just been a busy couple of weeks, and instead of rushing something out, we're like, okay, let's just give it a minute and then regroup. But it was just really busy. I went on vacation, and you got arrested for that thing we're not going
to
talk
about. Yeah, somebody had to post bail for me. Yeah. It takes time. It's not like an easy, like it doesn't get done in a day.
That's what they said about Rome. Yeah. It doesn't get done in a day, bro. Hey, oh.
Yeah, that's a, hey, Rome doesn't get done in a day.
It's plumbing here. Oh, whoa. doesn't get done in a day. Who did this, Tyler? Yeah, look at this shit. How much do you think they pay for this?
Podcasting is a time consuming thing.
It is.
Especially if you want to stay up to date, like it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. And man, we were looking at subjects, but there's just been a lot going on in the watch industry. And there's a lot to talk about here. A lot of releases. There's events.
It's true. As much as I was, as much as we're always talking about, hey, let's do like this cool, interesting episode about like some sort of a discussion or comparison. There's so many releases. And this is obviously the best time of the year for watches, right? Watches right. and Wonders are coming up next month.
I was about to say.
There's just so much going on, you can't keep up. Like we could probably do an episode every couple of days and have enough to talk about new releases.
I mean, but Scottish Watches does. Fratello's always releasing stuff. Like it's crazy, yeah. But we can do segments. I know we like to go that route. And when is Watches and Wonders? I think that's going to be.
I think it's end of April.
Watches and Wonders 2024. I shouldn't know this. It's April 13th to the 15th. So it's in less than a month.
Yeah, that's what I meant awesome. When I said the end of April.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
The end of the middle of April.
I mean, exactly. Yeah,
the end of the first week. The end of the second week of April.
It's April. Well, I mean, with all that in mind, I think we also have an interesting episode today. I mean, obviously, we'll cover watch releases that of which there are many. But yeah. Also, Oscars have just happened a couple weeks ago. Yeah. And I'm completely lost in time. And as usual, there are some interesting, let's say, watch spotting from celebrities. And some celebrities I have never even heard of, but they wear some really amazing pieces. And I think there's also some interesting articles and actually YouTube videos about an analysis of the Morgan Stanley
report. For the Swiss watch industry in 2023. They're really Swiss specific, but I think that'll be interesting.
Yeah,
I was kind of disappointed. You know that at the Oscars, I didn't see anyone named Oscar, so I was really disappointed looking for that. Yeah. Don't go looking for it, guys. You will waste a lot.
Isn't
of time.
It supposed to be Oscar's party? Where's Oscar?
I don't know.
I don't think I've ever seen him.
He was sick. Yeah, I think he was sick. Yeah, I don't think he could make it.
Speaking of Oscars, like I haven't watched Oscars. I just looked up who won. I just looked up the celebrities and what we were wearing. I think I watched a few YouTube videos from like the late night show hosts, like the Jimmy Kimmel, Guillermo, was always funny. But I didn't really actually watch the Oscars. I didn't really care.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, is it me? Like, always it's like I always try to find, like if I have a feeling that the Oscars are not as interesting anymore. Is it me or is it like an actual statistic? Is there something that I can support?
Well, I think you're onto something because from my understanding, the ratings have gone down for all of those things in general. They're desperately trying to get more ratings. But I was never one of those people who was really like into Entertainment Tonight, knowing what celebrities are up to, all that
fun.
Stuff. I just...
Not for me.
I couldn't care less. Although I'm decent at trivia. What I do is when I watch a movie, I'll go on IMDb and see who acted and what and all that sort of thing I can figure out. But the gossip of like, what are you wearing, blah, 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 and all this stuff at the... I'm not really that interested. I used to like... When I was younger, I used to like the Grammys for the performances, not to see who won. Because sometimes you want to see... But again, now you can get a song on your fingertips like this. I used to have to sit there and there used to be a music channel that would do like the top 100 songs of the year and I would record it because I wanted to hear that song when I wanted. I would listen to like the countdown on the radio because we didn't have access to the music on our fingertips. And I think it was the same with like movies. You're like, you have to like wait for it to come out on TV and, you know, rent it, or it wasn't the same kind of experience we can get now where you just, you wait a month and it's out available for streaming in 4K. It's crazy. So I think it's just doesn't really interest me too much. I just want to see if Christopher Nolan finally won. And really,
I think
they
he
swept
did, right?
Everything.
For Oppenheimer?
Yeah, but it's his 8th nomination and that was his first win for director.
That's surprising. But look, and that's the other thing. I'm not, like, DiCaprio won for the, not Descendant.
Revenant,
yeah. And,
the Descendant.
Like, yeah, I don't know, Descendants. It was the George Clooney
Descendant
movie,
of Dog Street. What?
So he won for The Revenant, and yeah, that, like, that wasn't his best movie and his best performance. He should have won for The Departed, for example, or maybe like Shutter Island even, right? That was fantastic.
You know, I think sometimes it's also the timing. Like when he had Wolf of Wall Street, he lost to Matthew McConaughey for Dallas Buyers Club, which he was excellent. And then I think Gangs of New York or one of those, Shutter Island, he lost.
Well, Shutter Island was not, I think it was after Gangs of New York. Wait, sorry.
No, I'm saying one of those, he got nominated and he lost to the guy Whitaker, who has the one eye there, the wonky eye, and he does plays the last King of Scotland. That was a great performance, Bim. Or he lost to Ray. You know, like he lost when Ray did a movie, I think it was... Right.
It was probably Jamie Foxx that did the movie about Ray. It wasn't Ray himself.
Yeah, exactly. It really wasn't? Shit. But see, I think some of those performances is just bad timing for some
but
of them.
But that's also,
right?
I think, like,
even
that
guy Denzel.
In the Oscars, like, there are years where there's just no good movies and somebody still wins an Oscar.
Yeah, right? I think that, what's his name?
Denzel? What's his name?
Denzel, for the one that he won, wasn't my favorite from him. That's what I wanted to say.
He's named after the capital of the United States.
What's that?
He's named after the capital of the United States.
Yeah. No, but I think it's one of his...
You know, a joke is funny when I say it twice.
Yeah, but he won for Training Day. But I don't think that was his best movie. I liked the other ones that he did, actually.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what we saw from... We'll get into the Oscars in a minute.
Yeah,
but,
let's do that. Let's do a quick wrist check, as usual, before. Yeah. What you're wearing?
I'm wearing something that I haven't worn on the podcast. I realized I got this September last year. It was a brand, a micro brand from France that went on Kickstarter the year before that. And I received the watch. It's called Moon, M-U-N. This is three French friends, Victor, Thibault, and Jean-Samuel, one from Nice, Strasbourg, and Bordeaux. They had a fascination with astronomy and the moon phase or the moon complication, specifically around a brand called Lush, which is a Soviet brand. Now it's Belarusian, I believe. And they were inspired by one of the watches that were there. And then they wanted to make a moon phase watch, which I thought was very ambitious as a first watch. What's cool is that the design was done with a collective of about 5,500 people. And they really made it a democratization of the dollar. So they're very transparent about what this watch cost them versus how much they sold it. The idea was to get the best quality possible, which I really liked. This one has a Salita SW288 4 Hz sapphire crystal front and back. It's a Swiss, very clearly all Swiss, all French. So everything that's not from Switzerland, they got in France. The strap, this is not the original strap. I put it on a Deluxe rubber strap, which gives it a little bit of like this modern look, but it's really an amazing rubber strap. But it comes on this like beautiful vegetable leather grained strap that's made from France. The moon disc on this watch, the moon disc, what it is actually sent to a Swiss company that does a replica of the moon itself. It had 9 steps of laser engraving, the stars, and without using UV rays. So you should see it. It's like a really proper replica of the moon in itself. They also, and the company that they use, AJS, that actually builds the watch and puts it together, is companies such as Zenith use this company as well. So they really went all out in terms of the quality. 38 millimeter diameter, 20 millimeter lug width, 11 millimeters thick, 100 meters of water resistance. So it's pretty much a Gata dress watch. You could wear this under for everything. And once I put on this rubber strap, you never have to worry about anything. So again, they said they export the movements to AJS. They assemble them in Besançon, which is a fourth generation family owned business. They test the water resistance and they'll do warranty and after service sale. They have little nods to the Apollo mission. There's like the 11th day on this day on the moon cycle is highlighted. And then it has this beautiful decorated high-end Sellita movement. So it's elaborated and a Geneva stripe perlage, blued screws. And this is a proper moon phase. So the difference between this and something that you see in the new Timex Marlin that has this moon phase, that it's not a real moon phase. It only has 29 day cycle. So the moon phase is every 29.5 days. So that's very difficult to achieve in a mechanical movement, 29.5 days, because it doesn't really fit in the typical cycle of anything that's mathematical. However, 59 teeth do. So this disc actually has two moons, 59 teeth, one day per each notch or 6 degrees. 59 days will move 360 degrees. But since you display the moon in one half of that circle, you'll get that moon precisely every 29 and a half days. So that's a really nice complication, well-finished, just a beautiful, I say, dress moonwatch, Swiss French made. Limited to 150 pieces only, unfortunately, but they're making everything with moon phases. They have some other nice stuff coming out. So yeah, that's the watch I'm wearing today.
Very cool. I think you showed that to me before. I mean, that you were thinking of buying it.
Yeah.
I think I've seen it before.
I got it on Kickstarter, so I got a good deal when I got it, but now I think they were like 1,400 euros for this Swiss French moon phase, but definitely just beautiful.
They also have a quartz version if you don't want to spend too much money.
Yeah.
For like 400 euros.
Absolutely.
I am wearing my Timex QLCA that you guys gave me a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I needed to change the battery and I did buy the battery. And it's interesting because this is one of those where it is like a typical, this round metal battery that you think that is the same for a lot of like remotes and stuff, but it isn't, because it's a very special one. It's a bit bigger than the rest. It's the CR2412 that is like, I guess maybe specific to like Japanese appliances, Japanese watches, I guess. It is very difficult to get. No stores have it. So I had to buy it online on Amazon.
Yeah.
But now I'm struggling. I can't even open the thing. I don't know. I'm trying to make sure I don't break it, but like, I guess it's just, there's no screws. It's just, you just have to pop it, but I have to find something to kind of get in under so I don't scratch the watch too much.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Yeah. Right. Not easy, that one. Yeah.
But yeah, I really like this watch, and this is a watch that's kind of like the fancy, I would say a fancy Casio,
yeah,
vintage digital watch, right? That you can get for like $100. I wish there was more like this, to be honest, because it's such a nice, interesting niche market of vintage inspired digital watches,
right?
Because back in the day, digital watches were, you know, obviously very popular. It was a new technology, and they were considered to be more maybe even classy and like elegant. Now you don't associate, let's say, those watches with, you know, classy and elegant. But I wish that there was more like this. I wish that more companies did this. Like Tissot tried to do this with the PRX recently, and then they completely failed, I think.
Yeah.
It was really unattractive, that watch. Casio just released that watch that
Casio
was very nice. Yeah, very
based
nice.
Based on the very first Casio that was released.
Exactly. But I wish Seiko did more of that too, right? Like Seiko is, you know, pumping out watch after watch, but I wish they did more because they have a interesting history when it comes to digital watches as well.
I have. So, wow, it's funny. And we did not talk about this ahead of time, guys. I have something very interesting happening now. Since I turned 40 this year, it means I was born in 1984. And I wanted to say I've been doing a lot of... I actually wanted to do a little bit of... I wanted to have a look at what is their watchmaking in the 80s. And unfortunately, in the 80s, for anyone listening out there, it was a bad time for watchmaking, a lot of it. I'll explain. First of all, it was still the end or still part of the quartz crisis time. So everything was in quartz. Everyone was pumping out a lot of quartz watches. So that's the first thing when you look in the 80s watches, it was great. It was not that many great icons that came out in the 80s. Obviously, the Casio G-Shock, obviously, that was a big famous one in 1983, 1984, 85 even. I can't remember. I think it's 83. The other thing is that gold also like went sextupled in price or went up six times in price, I think, in fabricate. So everything became gold-plated. There was no gold watches. The 70s were really a great time, or the 60s, because everything was in gold, 14-karat dress watches with mechanical movements. It was still the time for it. But the 80s really didn't have anything. However, one famous watch, or one watch that really, I think, marked my childhood watching Commando or Predator and all that was the Seiko Arnie that also came out in 1983. So there's a great company online called DC Vintage. You can look them up.
Mm-hmm.
People of the likes of Ronnie Chang and who else? There was the guy from Hawaii Five-O. Anyway, some really handsome Chinese or Asian guy. He sourced a watch off that site as well, the Bruce Lee specifically. The reason why I say that is because Ronnie Cheng makes fun of him because he's so handsome. But anyway, if you go to this site, they work out of the DC area in Los Angeles. And if for a modest fee, they will help you find an example of the watch that you want for the year that you're watching, when you're looking for, and they'll find it. So I've commissioned them to find a 1984 Seiko Arnie that is going to commemorate my 40th birthday, to have exactly one from the year that I was born, because it wasn't a great time for watchmaking, but that one is pretty awesome and it means a lot. So I'm like, it's going to be cool. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they're able to source me, but it's going to take a while, they said, but yeah, it's pretty cool. Good way to highlight the birthday.
For sure. For anybody listening, what's the premium that they charge for the service?
$150 US off the price of the watch.
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
So that's the finder's
fee. That's very
cool. Yeah, they're very nice people, and you can read all their testimonials. They have some, and they have a great collection. They also have stuff in stock, so you can go see what they're currently selling. And really good experience with them from what I've gathered online.
Is there a way to use them to, let's say, get any kind of watch? Like if you want to get like a vintage IWC,
they'll tell you they won't, but you reach out to them and they'll absolutely say, we can look for that for you. No problem.
That's a very cool service. Pretty cool service. For somebody who actually loves like researching and looking for watches, this is an amazing service, right?
Yeah.
Somebody pays you money to just look on forums and like try to find a good watch.
And sorry, if the watch is less than $1,000, it's only $50 or $100 or something like that. It's less. It's half. Okay. I think if it's above $1,000, it costs more. But you can see it in the site itself. DC Vintage.
Yeah.
Look them up. Great.
Very cool. We'll put them in the show notes.
Yeah. So that's what I was looking at from a digital Seiko for sure.
All right.
What do you? That's what you were wearing. You want to jump right into the topic?
Let's do that. Let's do some news first.
Yes. And I think we both wanted to talk about this one, at least because we're very excited to share the update. But VPC, Venustas per Constantium, we did an episode with their founder. If people aren't familiar, VPC is a brand that was started by one of the writers of Fratello, Thomas Van Straten. We did an episode about him. But more so than that, I think he's very interesting because the approach he did was to document and chronic and journal the entire process of building a watch brand, starting with finding a designer, details such as fonts, typography, the case design, the case integration. He gets into the financing, the finding suppliers. He gets into what it means to build a watch brand at scale. He gets into all the nitty gritty details of what you would normally not find to want in the hope of trying to build a go anywhere, do anything watch. So his first model, the Type 37 HW. So this guy got a watch that he was very proud to build. He put in a top grade Salida and just built a very, I would say, high quality watch. The thing comes out, it came out about like 2,700 or 2,400 euros. And I think his desire was to try to sell all 350 units in order to make sure that this could go to the production. So he actually picked up all of the risk. The one thing that I was chatting with Dimitri about that kind of caught me off guard was like, gosh, we didn't see any actual renderings of the picture until the day it went live. So it gave a lot of people, I think, I really want to see what this kind of looked like. But boy, do these things look great. The green, the white or gray dial, and then this blue dial. Big panda sub-seconds, hardened case at 1800 Vickers, which is like stronger than most hardened steel from Zin or Damasco. This thing is a 37.5 millimeter width, 9.8 millimeters in height, including the crystal and the lug to lug of 45. So this thing kind of small, it's not small, but it definitely fits into that date just territory where he was so famously wrote a book about as an author after getting out of the vintage watch sector and joining Fratello. Or when he was at the vintage watch shop before joining Fratello, I think he wrote this book. Nevertheless, great episode. Listen to it. VPC Watch. It went live. And I'm very happy to be able to share that it was successful. He was able to sell all the units that he needed to in order to start production. And so they're going forward. So I'm very, very happy for him.
Just add a couple of things to this. One thing that really stood out to me when we were interviewing Thomas, and then because he documented his whole, let's say, journey and every step of the process of first figuring out what he wants to build, approaching the design, finding somebody to help him do the design, finding somebody to help him do the, let's say, the alpha versions of the watch. When you go to his website and you look at the pictures of the three different color variations and you look at the zoomed in, let's say, images of different parts of the watch, you should know that every square millimeter of every watch is like meticulously designed. Yeah. There isn't anything that's an afterthought, which to me was like, wow, it's crazy. Because I think when we talked a bit about was that the words Swiss made that are written on the small sub-dial or on the second sub-dial.
They're not symmetrical? Or
that it took him, they're not, because, and he made his own custom font to do this because nothing else really like stood out to him. And he's like, no, it has to be perfect.
He said that once they did the rendering, he says, I didn't like the spacing, so I made them space it out even more, even though it wasn't what was, you know, like the right spacing at first. So yeah.
And it's crazy because that little small piece of the watch that says Swiss made on that small sub-dial takes up maybe like 5 millimeters of space. So, you know, all that just goes to say that, like, if you're paying 2,479 euros, that's the price right now on the website for this watch, like, it's worth every penny.
Absolutely. No, very, very impressed with what they shared there. Yeah, very, very, very nice.
And colors are awesome. Like,
no, those, you
know,
dials.
Every color is amazing. I don't even know which one I would prefer.
The contrast.
I like the blue.
The blue's great with that white contrasting subbed out. Looks great.
Yeah, the blue is nice. But even the forest green is awesome. Yeah. The forest green with the dark gray subbed out also looks amazing. Anyways, they all are amazing. I would like to see all of them. Fantastic watch. The hardening of the case and the bracelet, right? To make sure it's like scratch proof or scratch resistant. Like, there literally is an ultimate Garo watch.
Absolutely.
And I think he even raised, I think when we were talking, he mentioned that he's going to do at least 100 meters of water resistance, but I think this one is 150.
He said he would go with as much as he can while preserving the thickness.
Yeah. Amazing.
And next he says would be looking with the same kind of design language, a diver of some nature. So that's, think of that, that kind of diver, the diver watch. It's going to be chic. Very nice. Bravo. What do you got?
Well, so let's go. The first one, there's a lot of Omegas recently, but I'm not going to go into Omegas yet.
Swatch. Swatch.
There's yet another collaboration between Frédéric Constant and Second Second.
Carl,
we all love Frédéric Constant.
made a mess on himself.
This one is a pretty cool idea. It doesn't look too bad. And I know I'm not a huge fan of Second Second when I started the conversation.
It doesn't look too bad. That's
like
great,
that.
Actually. That's interesting.
So Frédéric Constant, it's a watch brand that we all love. They make some really awesome watches. They do some very interesting designs. And they've been around, like, really growing significantly, I would say, in the last, specifically, like, maybe last 10 years or so.
Yeah.
But they've been around for a while now. They've been around since 1988, I think. Second Second is a designer who kind of, he started to, I can't remember exactly how his whole business started, but he at some point started to do those like funny, maybe almost pixelated kind of adjustments to famous watches or famous used watches, and eventually started to collaborate with new brands to create custom designs. Sometimes it's a play on a specific joke about the watch, a specific theme that is interesting about the watch.
Right.
So they're not random. Everything has some sort of a
meaning,
point to it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are, I would say, a bit more gimmicky. Some of them are really nice. There are a few of them that are really nice. I think we bought the Spinnaker Second Second edition with
the
50 Phantoms.
The one I really like.
An amazing version.
I have the Timex Q, which is like a Pepsi dial,
yeah.
And it has a straw instead of the seconds hand because it's Pepsi. So I thought that was pretty, pretty cool.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
That's what the straw is for. So what they did this time, they took their one of the more famous lines. It's the Slimline Moon Phase manufacturer from Frédéric Constant, and created an altered version that showcases or show tries to emphasize the fact that a lot of the stuff in the production of their watches is manually made. It's not a machine. It's not some sort of a conveyor belt that assembles watches. There's a lot of stuff that is completely assembled by a human,
right?
Which is what they did. So they, you know, like if you look at the watch, the design of the logo itself that, that says Frédéric Constant on the dial, it's specifically done as if it's handwritten,
right?
And the font is like it kind of, you know, wobbles left and right. So you know, it's somebody who's not very good at calligraphy did it on purpose.
Yeah.
And so there's not much going on the dial. I think that's actually very nice. Like I would wear this watch because I don't like when there's too much going on with second. Designs. However, the back has an open case back with a nice, as usual, I mean, the finishing on Frédéric Constant watches is beautiful. So the manufacturer implies that this is the proprietary Frédéric Constant movement.
Yeah.
And they have an open case back with a beautifully decorated movement and a rotor. And on top of the sapphire glass that covers that open case back, they wrote, "How do we tell the world that manual assembly is at the core of our manufacture?"
Yeah.
We asked artist Second Second to do it, and he took it too far, which is kind of the joke.
So we made the watch.
Exactly. So we made the watch.
The
two versions, there's a rose gold, there's a regular stainless steel, 3,295 euros, which I think is similar to what the regular slimline Moonphase manufacturer costs. So it's not much more than that.
Yeah.
You're not paying too much of a premium for this, for sure, right. if any at all. And it's a beautiful watch. I'm not a huge fan of Second Second, but look, sometimes I really like his designs. This one is decent, and it's good. Like it's amazing. Like it seems that a watch brand after watch brand are now jumping on the bandwagon and doing collabs with him.
Say to me, I think where he succeeds the most is when he gets into the space of those that are maybe more attainable watches. I like when he gets into doing things on, you know, Patek and Langas, is that maybe I just can't relate to it because I don't have that much disposable income where I could then modify a Langenzon or my Zeitwerk or my, you know, Vacheron Constantin overseas. I don't, or my Rolex or my vintage Rolex Oyster Date. Maybe the Oyster Perpetual could be a little bit more fun. You're just changing the second hand on it. But sometimes when they go on a little bit like painting the dial and stuff, it's not something that really attracted me too much. And some of it I was like, well, when he was doing a lot of like those 8-bit pixel things, that sort of things, it wasn't my cup of tea. Doing that on a like Zelda looking things, the swords and stuff. It wasn't my
like the H Moser with an eraser.
It's tough. It was tough.
Not my thing. Yeah. I think we had this discussion before. I kind of agree that his stuff, it works with maybe more affordable watches. And when you're taking a piece of art, especially if it's a vintage model,
right,
and you kind of butcher it a little bit, Frankenstein it, I'm not
tough.
Necessarily
tough.
A big fan of that. Yeah.
It's very specific taste. Great.
Yeah.
Next up, Seiko. I'm going back to them. We were talking about a Gatta watch from VPC. They also came out with a new line in the classic series of the Presage. Presage being a little bit on the dressier side, higher end side. The SPB 463, 465, 467. They're three-hand configurations with the date, open heart models 469 and 471. How to define these? I call them sporty dressy. 40.2 millimeters in diameter, 13 millimeters thick, fluted crown, so with a nice S on it. So it makes it a little bit dressy on that crown, and it has the S that makes it things of like the laurel, like the alpinist that I have has that S. The case is mainly polished, some satin finish, nice well-rounded construction, makes it seem relatively slim. I like the car, the colors to these. They need to be really, like once you take a look at them and you get close to the dial, what Seiko I think does very well is their dial work. That's something that they do very, very well. Very simple, straightforward dial. And I think they executed the date very well for a nice contrast to the dial. The watches are driven by a 6R55 automatic movement. So that's a 3 Hertz, 72 hour power reserve. So you're looking at 3 days, open case back. Nice gold colored rotor, bi-directional winding, so it'll wind both ways. Retails for 1,000 euros. So that's an MSRP. You're going to get a deal if you go shopping for it. And this thing is like this Jubilee style or whatever you want to call it, a bracelet that goes with it. So that one's really, really great. That's for the 300. Then the open heart one is very similar. This one comes with sub-dials.
A slightly better movement, I think.
It's a different movement because you have a 24-hour display at the 6 o'clock and then you have the open heart at the 9 o'clock. So this one has this like nice creamy white dial that apparently is supposed to be associated by what monks used to wear. This one's powered, like you said, by Ndunda Movement, the 6R5J, 73 hours of power reserve. Again, open case back that has the gold rotor, but this one comes at a little bit heftier price of 1,230 euros. But again, same dimensions, 40.2, 13 millimeters thick. They all have 100 meters of water resistance. Nothing to argue about this one. This could be someone wants a Seiko and they don't know exactly what they want. They want a Datejust alternative, something that Datejust alternative. The reason I say that is it has that like sports gada, all sporty chic kind of thing. But it's also very Seiko. It doesn't look like a, you know what I mean? It doesn't try to look like a Datejust. It tries to look like a Seiko. And I think it does a really good job at it. Because I look at it, I go, yeah, that looks like a Seiko. And it's good on them. Yeah.
I find that looking at those watches, because this is like the no-nonsense Seiko, right?
Yeah.
Watch that is very classy, very, what's it called?
Available, I guess.
Subdued, I'd say, a little bit. Doesn't have much going on, right? It's not excessive in terms of design. To me, this is like Seiko.
Yeah.
Which is what I think of when I think of Seiko. That's kind of what I think of. But also, this to me just says Japanese watch.
Yeah.
I can't imagine and like a watch from another country that has that look, that design.
The sharp angles, the polish.
It's a very elegant, very basic design, but it's like, I can expect that from Citizen, from Seiko, and it's a very specific to like a Japanese, let's say, design.
No, you're 100% style. Right. Yeah.
And it was very nice. Very nice. And they're quite affordable, like 1,200 euros, right, for the watches. Oh, sorry, 1,000 euros, between 1,000 and 1,200, depending on the different type. I think the open heart one is a bit more expensive because it has 3 days of power reserve.
I think they both have 3 days of power reserve,
Very nice.
Yeah, yeah. The other one is like 60-some hours, and the first one that doesn't have the open heart and the 24 aperture is like 70 hours.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, the reason I'm saying that is because I think the one that has the open heart specifically says 3 days on the dial.
3 days, exactly.
Very nice. Colors are pretty cool too.
Yeah.
All right. Next. Actually, let's stay in Japan. This is a very recent release. I think we both just saw it today, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
From a Citizen, who decided to venture into the integrated bracelet market, which is cool. We recently did an episode about Citizen in general. We really like this brand. Again, they have so much history. There are so many interesting releases that they have. They've created this amazing quartz movement not too long ago that is the most precise movement in the world. Some super, super like high-end, like their precision is what, 1 second per year.
So to be fair, they have been in the integrated bracelet with the Tussoya. Is it Tussoya? Is that how it's pronounced? Find the name right here. But the Tussoya is
on Japanese pronunciations.
Yeah, I'm probably butchering that. But they came out with the they recently had a lot of success with the Tussoya. Yes, the Tsuyosa. Tsuyosa. So they came out with this one, was their integrated, very affordable one. But a few years back, they came out with the Citizen Series 8, I think you're about to talk about, but it wasn't in this configuration.
Yep.
And it's part of their high-end group, the Series 8 model. So it comes in with their higher-end movements. Let's call it not the 8 series movements, believe it or not. I think the Series 8, but I think they come in with some of their better, more robust.
No, it is a 9,000.
It's just a little bit more robust. I had one. I ended up selling it because I just wasn't bonding with it. But this one looks great. Tell us about it, Dima.
So it kind of makes me think a little bit of, that's why I mentioned the integrated bracelet kind of bandwagon that, you know, a lot of brands are jumping on lately. It does draw in my head similarities between, you know, the recent engineer, the APs of releases, the, you know, the
but this one definitely looks like the AP, right, I think, Royal Oak Offshore, the diver's version of that Royal Oak. Yeah, yeah.
It does.
If it had a rubber strap, it would.
The case shape also kind of reminds me a little bit of the Casio.
Yeah.
The case shape itself. But, you know, so it's not to take away from the watch. The watch is very cool looking. So the model is, it's the Citizen Series 8 890 mechanical dive watch. They are, unlike the name, they are they come in with an in-house caliber 9051. That's a 4 hertz frequency. Accuracy is minus 10 to plus 20 seconds per day. The watch itself is a 40.5 millimeter in diameter, 11.7 thickness. Lug to lug is 46.6. And like, this watch is a gotta for sure, because it also has a 200 meter water resistance.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, even though it's 200 meters of water resistance, it doesn't have a screw down crown. 8-sided bezel, brushed and polished finishes. So the blue version has a, like, I'd say a traditional, I would say more traditional, because you see a lot of that on integrated bracelet watches, a checkered pattern on the dial, whereas the other two versions, there's a gold version.
It looks like dial looks almost like it's woven into one another. It's almost like this weird weave. Huh? It's very nice.
Yeah. And I got to say, I think there's a bit of an inspiration behind maybe the engineer. Because yeah. I feel like the IWC has almost exactly, not exactly.
But there's that texture in that pattern in the dial, exactly. That, like, it gives it texture. And man, that everything on this watch looks great. I love the way the hands sit out. I love the integrated.
Yeah.
So this one has a diver's bezel integrated within it as a compressor style. So again, think of the Royal Oak, the AP Royal Oak Offshore, which is the diver's version of that Royal Oak, on a full bracelet. And this one has that kind of like style and this beautiful pattern and the contrast of those blues. I can't, I'm a sucker for the blue watch. And yeah, it's really quite well.
I really like it. And so this is the steel version. This is going to be, let's say, the more common of this release. The steel version with the blue dial. There are also two other versions. And by the way, the price of the steel version, which is, I think, amazing, it's only 995 euros.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Is it?
The other two versions, yeah. So the other two versions are the gold-colored and limited copper, pink, or salmon dial versions. The last one, the salmon one, is limited to 700 pieces. They are going to be a bit more expensive. I think there's a bit of a difference. I'm not sure exactly which one was the difference, but basically the price for the blue steel or for the blue steel.
Blue steel.
I think it was all under.
Yeah, I know. You'd even have to tell me. I knew.
The price for the blue version. Magnum. Yeah. The price for the blue version is between 995 and 1,095 euros, whereas the other versions, the colored versions, they're 1,600.
So yeah, and I don't even like them as much. The gold one really looks like the Casio in gold.
I love the salmon one.
Is nice. Yeah, it's very unique.
I agree about the gold one. I feel like the salmon one would be
It's like a amazing copper pink salmon. Yeah, exactly. But that blue one, I thought the blue one was more expensive than that. That looks great. Oh man, that looks really good.
I kind of want to see how. Yeah, I'm gonna definitely look. Like, maybe that could be my first Citizen.
I'm looking here online. First thing, yes, there's certain resemblance to a Royal Oak Offshore. There you go. It was no doubt. It's hard to, but it's a very beautiful, well done watch. Can't wait to.
Well, every watch exactly. is resembling another watch, right? They all have a dial and a second hand.
Right. Yeah. All right. So that's very, very nice. I'm going to go somewhere else now. Let's go where else. Someone there that was big, that we got some nice release this week.
Go to Russia. They just had the election.
How did that go? Who won?
surprisingly to everyone, Putin won once again with, I think, 87%.
25 years
voters
now?
Voted for him.
Leadership.
Leadership, ownership.
So coming back, let's stay in Japan. Unveiled in 2022, we saw the Citizen Tsuyosa, the automatic NJ015. So they just came out with four new colors to this watch. So they're really leaning into this one. But if you read about it, guys, I really think it's worth having a look, going to try this, because not only are they very good quality, I think bang for buck, they are incredibly well priced. If you look at the Tissot PRX, which was kind of dominating that, this one comes in for a fraction of that. I think you get this watch for less than $400 Canadian on eBay, even in the low 300s. This one has a great look. It makes me think a little bit of an Oyster Quartz case, except the crown is at the four, which Citizen does well, and has this bracelet, kind of like a president's bracelet. So it has that kind of like a thicker bracelet. So this one, they came out with a few more colors. They have this like green, almost like a camo wave dial. They have another one that is like a textured camouflage dial. That's what I was saying. And then they have this other one, brushed salmon dial, which I find are just quite beautiful. And then they have these other two ones that have sunray brush dials. So one is like a champagne with gold colored hands. And then they have another one in orange, which is just, I think my favorite of the gang is that orange. I think that's a great summer watch is coming. They're priced at 299 euros. identical to the other ones. You're looking at 40 millimeter diameter, 11.7 millimeter barrel shaped steel case, 50 meters of water resistance. So you're not going swimming into this one, but 8210 automatic three link bracelet. Think of the 80s folding clasp, exposed case back, bulletproof movement, kind of loud, comes with all those little quirks, but it's pretty awesome for the price. They also have a Tsuyosa small second automatic. So this one comes in just like the other ones at the same identical proportions, but instead of having a second hands on the regular centered part of it, this one has a sub dial that carries the second hands at the 6 o'clock. This one really is inspired by the Art Deco era. And so you have three colors. You have this like gold, blue, salmon.
Yes, you may.
Yeah, there's like a gray, blue, and then they call it salmon. Yeah, silver. They're all silver colored subdials, and the second hand of that subdial has a touch of color. This one is the caliber 8322, which is a little bit different. Doesn't have that gold decoration in the back, but it still has a little bit of some striped decor. 60 hours of power reserve and a stop second mechanism, so it hacks. These ones come in at $359 on the leather strap and $379 on the bracelet, which for sure you can negotiate down a little bit. Hard to argue with this for getting yourself a little integrated bracelet fun if you want to just get into it. I've seen these in person. I've tried them on. They feel really good. Much better than their price leads to. I thought they'd be much more jingly jangly, and they're really, really quite, quite good.
They are quite nice. And I'm trying to think what kind of a target market. I think this is an amazing, like, you know, if you have a son who's graduating high school or something like that, you want to give him like a good first watch. That's a great, I think, choice.
Or if you're just looking to get into the integrated bracelet, this is a good one too.
Yeah. Yeah. They're pretty nice looking watches. They're robust. And you know what? As you were talking, I looked up Tsuyosa. What
means,
does that mean?
I think I know what it means.
What does it translate to?
I think I know what it means. So let me tell you. I think it means, you know, white Kleenex, because I think that it's made to clean up all of the dirt from your life. So when you put it on, you can feel the cleanliness and its power through your day-to-day, inspire you to do your best work. Right? That's what I meant. Or it's a dumpling of some sort to eat. No? Okay.
No, not at all. Yeah, it's a dumpling. It's typical for the Japanese. Yeah, it's a dumpling. It actually translates directly. Tsuyosa means strength.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was way off.
So I guess you can use those watches in a fight.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't have brass knuckles, I mean, usually everybody has, but if you don't, if you forgot your brass knuckles at home, you can use Tsuyosa.
Oh, I learned a Russian word.
But, and jokes aside, no, is it, which one?
Slava. Humanism? So, Slava.
Oh.
Be, Slava be there. What is it? Slava to you. Is Slava glory?
Okay, well, thanks. Slava to me.
Yeah, it is. Slava, hope you have a
glory, Slava hole.
Well, I wasn't even going there. I was going to say glorious day or something. You went right to glory hole. God damn. Well, geez, okay. Yeah, you want to go there? Would you like to see my Slava hole? Good God. Yet.
Little known fact.
Yet.
Net. No gracias.
But the reason I learned that is because I have this book on Russian wristwatches, and it has all of the different ones, and then it'll say like raketa, and then it'll say like flight. Is right means flight or arrow?
Right. Arrow. Well, raketa, no, raketa rocket, is a rocket.
Which is the one that's arrow, or polyat means
strela.
Strela is arrow, and then they put the word, and then they put the translation next to it. So that's where I learned Slava. It wasn't from visiting a Slava hole.
I mean, like, all jokes aside, Slava, like, the Russian language has more words. Let's say, like, in English, glory and glory hole have the same word in it, but they have a completely different meaning.
Jesus.
In Russia, you have different words for those things. You don't use the word. You don't reuse the
please
same
one. Please insert
the
sound. Yeah, the more you know. Anyways.
What's next? Well, there's another one very interesting release, and I'm very glad to see it. And I'm happy that one of the Swatch brands is, and then, you know, like Tissot is doing this, and it seems that they're listening to their customers. Maybe they're listening to me. Maybe it's just
and doing the opposite.
Anyways, it kind of looks like they're, yeah, they kind of listen to it kind of looks like it kind of feels like they listen to me. But basically, Mido.
I can never think of that when they say the name Mido.
So Mido just released, let's say, a new version. It's a special edition of the Ocean Star GMT. I really, really like the Ocean Star GMT. I like the design. I like the bezel. I pretty much like everything about that watch, but the size. The size was like 44 millimeters. Now they just released the special edition of the Ocean Star, smaller in 40.5 millimeters instead of the 44.
Mm.
Amazing. Like, instantly for me, this is like in the realm of potential purchases, just because that watch is like super universal. It's a watch that's only 1400 euros. I think it's a true GMT that's fed by a Swatch Powermatic 80 with the complication to do a GMT hand.
Yeah.
This watch is almost an ultimate gada, because first of all, you have multiple time zones in a GMT. Also, this is like a diver watch because it has 200 meters of water resistance, rotating bezel. Right. It's quite affordable, has the Tissot movement that you can take anywhere and get it repaired for not a very expensive price. Color wise, I think it's beautiful. It has a vintage look with like a nice like navy dial, navy bezel. Gorgeous. And this pretty nice looking also, I think it's an 11 or 10 link bracelet. It's almost like a mesh bracelet, except the links are a bit too big to call it proper mesh. Yeah. If you know what I mean? Like, it still to me looks like a regular bracelet, but it's just, it has a lot of links. It's gorgeous. I really like it. It's not limited in production and it's available right now.
Well, I think that, I think I mentioned that the Hodinkee limited edition that they did as well, they had kind of like that nice vibe. I like when, definitely great build quality. I'd love to see Certina in North America to really see them next to one another. But Mido holds that like right in between some of the Swatch brands that are on the lower side of things, like a high-end Tissot right below when Longines starts to be affordable, because Mido's like right there. I think they're in that $1,000 to $2,000 segment, and they kind of own it in terms of what they're selling. They're tough to argue with them. Certina's really there as well. Obviously Seiko, those kinds of brands, but I think Oris and Longines are now in the 2000 range and they're like, they're better ones. They're really starting to trend to move into that area, but Mido is doing some really killer things there. And I think, you know, your friend Rob was shopping for a watch and he settled on that one. And I think, I remember he wanted to go for maybe one of the older ones to save a little money, but I was like, that one is a better movement. Get the one that's a little bit smaller, has the wave dial. And I think he did that. He spent the extra couple hundred, but it was just the newer watch. And I think Mido, it was an example of how through their generations, they're improving on their watches and they're improving on their size. They're improving on their thickness. They're improving on the technology, their finish and that kind of footprint. So, yeah.
But he unfortunately got an Apple Watch recently, so I don't really talk to him anymore.
No, that's sad. We wish him good luck in the future.
Yeah, that's sad.
We hope society helps him and no one pushes him down the stairs. So yeah, next up, a very interesting watch. I had to discuss it right in time for this weekend, which was St. Patrick's Day. So for anyone out there who was able to party and get really shit-faced, I hope you're feeling better. Oh, because you're going to hear this the week after. So maybe you're still hungover. So that means it was really worth it. So in commemoration of that, there was, and we didn't really talk about it, but there was like British Watch Week or British Watchmakers Fair. There was a special British watchmaking event that took place at this point when you guys are listening a couple of weeks back. So there's a brand that comes from the UK, William Wood, which is a great name for a porn star when you think about it.
That's
a good name. Yeah, yeah. What's your name? William Wood. Sure.
I mean, Richard Wood or Dick Wood would be pretty
cool. Dick Wood.
Cool.
Yeah. Unless your name's Richard Black.
But William Wood.
Oh, yeah. William Wood is pretty good. So anyway, he was not a watchmaker by trade. He was a firefighter in the British Fire Service, and he was there for like 25 years. So his son, his grandson, Johnny, embarked to build
Johnny.
Yeah, he built this watch brand. We've seen them out in New York. They weren't something that I paid too much attention to. They were very clever as watches. They had rubber straps that were made of the rubber or recycling hoses, the hoses. Yeah. They had a lot of different, nods to firefighters, so to speak. I was always just always a little reticent based on the price. It was always like they were kind of expensive. So essentially, in this one, they did a commemoration, this all green fire exit sign. So the whole point of this watch is to have fun with emergency, which I guess is good. Let's take fire emergencies and have fun with it. But I actually quite like what they did with this one. It's very, very, very green. Very paying attention to the fire exits. And what I actually want to just draw people's attention on, if they didn't know this, there was a watch that came out that actually I think started this trend. There was a limited edition isotope called the Hydrium X Exit. And that one was a limited edition, and it literally says it's time to discuss your exit strategy. So in this one, they actually, it comes with a reference to an exit sign. How can I say, nod to it? It had a fully loomed dial and had a fully, I think that the bezel wasn't loomed. It had the pip that was loomed, but this one has, it was a 300 meter diver, and it was just kind of a nod to the exits. So William Wood kind of did the same thing, and Jose Miranda, who's the owner of Isotope, actually came out and said, "Hey, that's really great. I hope that we could share into kind of like an inspiration, and we had a part of that inspiration." So this one is actually quite an interesting watch that came out of it. So this one is the fire exit watch is brushed dark gunmetal. 41 millimeter diameter, 13.5 millimeters thick, lug width of 20 millimeters. So just a right size proportion there, little under 50 lug to lug, and has a fluted crown. So within it, you have, and you should see this thing under when it's loomed, is just incredible. Sapphire crystal insert. And then what it has is seven different positions for the date. And at the 3 o'clock position, it reveals the day of the week. And the day of the week is interpreted by different, how can I say, scenarios of emergencies. And it just like it displays your routine activity. So these icons are supposed to display the day of the week. So let me just give an example. So Monday, it shows you being late for work. Tuesday shows hard work. Wednesday shows, you know, travel. Thursday shows exercising. Friday celebrates the arrival of the weekend. Saturday, this party. And Sunday is just like a day of relaxation. I have to say that's actually very cool. And then in the back of the watch, it says fire exit. And then there's a person there on the back. So this one is a Sellita SW220. 41 hours of power reserve, just typical 4 hertz movement. Very clever watch, very expensive watch, 1,495 Great British pounds. But I have to say, I really liked how clever this one was.
I agree with you. I think that this one is very interesting. It's very creative. I don't think I've seen, let's say, similar style of it, similar design. This is very original to me. But I do also have a problem a bit with the prices of William Wood watches. But you know, all it is to say is that if you're looking at the specs, you won't see the value.
Yeah.
Right. I think the devil is in the details, and in this case, it is probably in the finishing and the materials that they're using. Right. So, like you said, they like the rubber straps that you actually use recycled fire hoses. I think they also use other materials in the case and the dial that are kind of related to maybe something recycled from the. Let's say fire department industry. It's pretty cool. It is expensive, but it is a pretty cool and a very original watch.
Absolutely. No, but good on them. It's the first, like I was never really intrigued by their brand. This is the first one that I really was like, oh, that looks great. That's cool. That's what I said. I was like, awesome. Yeah.
Should we, I guess,
get to the Oscars?
Pivot into the next. We can do Oscars or we can talk about the Swiss watch industry. Through the Morgan Stanley.
Oh, yes, we should talk about that. Well, really quickly, in just a few minutes, what did you see in the Oscars? What were your takeaways?
There's a few things I think that, well, look, I would say one thing that was interesting to me was that Michelle Yeoh, I don't know how to properly pronounce her last name, she was wearing a Richard Mille. That was pretty cool.
I've read that was her husband's Mille, super cool. Rich.
Oh, really?
So I don't think she was sponsored. I think it's awesome that it was her wearing that. I don't think she was sponsored.
And
it's
a Richard Mille RM07-02. It's a very nice looking, elegant, still has that the same kind of design cues as you would expect from a Richard Mille, but
yes.
it's a very nice looking watch. It's a pretty watch. And obviously, as usual, you expect of Richard Mille, it has some pretty crazy engineering choices that were made. That stood out to me quite a bit. I think it was very interesting.
My second one I'll pull out, Federer wears the Daytona Le Mans, the release for the 70th anniversary of the Daytona in 2023. Breitling, if you're listening, that's what you should have done with something with the Navi timer to celebrate its 70th anniversary, I think, in 2022, and you guys didn't do anything. So that was a little bit sad to see that one. But well done for Federer. Very Federer-esque. I'm happy to see that Cillian Murphy won Best Actor, and he did that wearing actually probably the most attainable watch that you could find, which was an Omega Deville Prestige in stainless steel, so not precious metal, on this beautiful
that
leather
strap. So cool, eh?
But I think it also fits his persona because he was kind of like, meh. You know, he's not really laid back.
Meh. Quick, what's the first movie you've seen with him?
Red Eye?
Very quickly. 28 Days Later.
Oh, that was first? Okay. I saw the one where he plays the Red Eye.
Yeah, with Rachel McAdams.
Yeah,
on the plane,
I think that
right?
came out first because he's really unknown in that movie.
I think Red Eye was after.
Was it after? Okay, because he was great in that movie, Red Eye.
I'm looking it up. Yeah, yeah.
Red Eye came out
in 2005.
Okay, and yeah. 20 Days Later was?
It was 2005. I actually haven't seen Red Eye. I just know what it is, but
you should watch it. It's really good because it's just...
It's Wes Craven.
Yeah, jeez. Yeah, and it's just like
it's
this...
It's a horror movie.
No, it's not. It's like a suspense. There's no like supernatural phenomena, but...
Right.
I really say Omega, a lot of Omega in the show. What's his name? Gosling, who should have been wearing, I guess, something more attainable, wore the unobtainable.
I was gonna say that, yeah.
Which, go ahead.
Yeah. The Tag Heuer that we covered not too long ago, right? The Carrera Plasma Diamant Avant-Garde with homegrown diamonds.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, beautiful watch.
Yeah.
But unattainable, like you said.
No.
Like, crazy. It's just like, hey, this is what we can do.
Absolutely.
Fuck you because you can't do the same. That's pretty much the statement that they made, right?
Exactly.
Beautiful watch. Very
surprised
cool.
to see Bradley Cooper now wearing IWC. Second time I think I've seen him. I think he's sponsoring Louis Vuitton now, but Louis Vuitton really taking a step up, coming out with some high-end horology with Fabrique du Temps, the high-end watch movement maker out of France. You saw them doing collaborations with Rechap Rejepi. People watch out. Louis Vuitton is, and I think the biggest step, Louis Vuitton has eliminated all their cheap watches as well. They're really stepping up their game to say we're going to be taken seriously in the watch game there. So I love the Tambour he was wearing, although that one's a precious metal, something in the $50,000-$60,000 range. That Tambour in the stainless steel is like a $20,000 watch. So right at the Patek Philippe, Nautilus, and those kinds of prices, beautiful watch. I have to say, I like that Louis Vuitton. They're making waves. Oh, and Dwayne Wade, I think, stole it in a lot of ways. Beautiful white tux. But this guy was wearing a Cartier Tank Must Large. So a quartz Cartier Tank. Sharp. Very sharp on him. Oh, no. I think they're saying he wore the extra large model. So if you wore the extra large model, then he has the date. Yeah, that makes more sense. So he wore the extra large. So that's the automatic or the mechanical.
The other one I was thinking of, like, who? Because you mentioned, like, is Cillian Murphy? Cillian,
yeah.
Right? He was wearing, let's say, more or less attainable watch, right? But I was thinking, like, somebody else was wearing an attainable watch. Brendan Fraser was wearing an Omega Constellation on leather strap.
Oh, yes.
Right? That was quite attainable, I think, as well. Very nice. Very nice looking watch.
Ooh, that blonde guy from that movie that you went to watch with the girl, with the popular girl now. She's super popular. What's her name? She was in the Euphoria.
Oh, Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah. So she's in that movie with that. You went to see a movie with her, right? And with that blonde guy. He's like the good-looking blonde guy.
I don't know his name. He was in Top Gun. I don't know his
name. He was wearing a Monaco, a black-faced caliber.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I see him here, but I don't know his name. Its name is...
I don't know his name.
Glenn Powell.
I think he has like a super American...
Glenn Powell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's okay. Super American name.
Yeah.
Colin Powell.
Colin Powell. Nope, that's not him.
Maybe he's related. Probably not. He's a white guy.
No, I thought that you can tell. I really think what needs to change is for watch brands. Sorry, if you're watching these award shows, it's fun. If you really want to reach out to the people, put some watches that I think are more attainable. I think that gets the most hype. These Jacob & Co's that are super expensive. If you're promoting your brand. I remember the award show that we saw, wasn't the Golden Globes or something like that. We talked about Omega was everywhere, remember? It was just like an Omega-sponsored event. So, fine. Omega does it good. They don't put too many crazy expensive, I find. They give versions that make it a little bit more realistic, accessible. But these award shows, if you really want to reach out to people, put some watches that are a little bit more attainable.
One more, I think, standout watch appearance was Anya Taylor-Joy, who was in that TV show.
Golf movie.
Was very popular.
No,
chess.
Chess. Sorry, I said golf.
The Queen's Gambit.
Yes.
I mean, she's obviously been in a lot of things. She's very talented. She was wearing a GLC 101 Rain in white gold, which basically is the, it's a play on, well, it's Queen. It's a play on the watch that Queen Elizabeth wore and was made specifically for her by GLC in 1929, and still to this day is the smallest watch caliber in the world.
Oh, nice.
Which is pretty cool.
Okay.
I think this is very, very cool. Because it almost looks like a small, nice-looking, elegant bracelet, yeah. But it has a watch has a in watch. The bracelet, which is very cool.
I think a Piaget, Cartier, all those things, yeah. I think that GLC, you got a... Pressure's on, man. Pressure's on for GLC.
Yeah, I do really hope that they... And, you know, maybe we can kind of shift slowly into the Morgan Stanley because, yes.
Go ahead. What were you going to say about that, about Morgan Stanley? Chargez l'écoute. Go for it.
Morgan Stanley did a report specifically about Swiss watches recently, about their performance and how they're doing in the market and maybe where they're going. And there's a well-known YouTuber, I don't remember his name, maybe you remember, who kind of did a review of that report and his own thoughts. Talking about different Swiss watch brands, how they performed in the past, and maybe where he thinks they're going. One thing that, you know, since we started talking about GLC, what GLC did in the last few years, they kind of significantly raised their prices to go into the higher, let's say, higher end market. However, based on their sales, based on their revenues, it seems what is happening is that people are now starting to buy more of their cheaper models,
uh-huh.
which in turn ends up decreasing their overall revenues.
Yeah.
And let's say if you look at the average retail price of their watches sold, it has also decreased in the last year. So whatever the model that they were trying to follow is completely not working for them right now. And I believe that is like something that GC is guilty of. You can see it from, let's say, the last year's releases in the Watches and Wonders and other different shows where like they do like a crazy unattainable version of a famous model.
Yeah.
And that's it, right? They don't do, let's say, new iterations of models or improved models of like their basic, their general lineup.
No, it's crazy.
So that's one thing.
The other thing that I highlight as well, you really see Rolex. You're seeing from the primary, secondary market, quite the correlation, feels deflated. Rolex increased production by something like 200,000 units, which is like 20%. And they're increasing.
Insane numbers. And I actually wrote down the numbers that he was saying from the report. Like they represent 30% of all Swiss watch sales. It's insane.
Rolex,
right?
Made history. They surpassed 10 billion Swiss francs in sales. They strengthened their market position by to be 30.3% in the retail market. So they upped their production by 200,000 units, but their increase in market share was only 1%. Think about that for a sec. So I guess it's showing that they're peaking. That's what those statistics will kind of imply. I think that they have such a control on their vertical integration that they have to kind of have a look at that. I think that anyway, it's quite interesting to see those numbers. They're quite startling for Rolex.
Yeah, and for anybody who's like, oh, you know, Rolex is just a fancy brand name that everybody knows that you're showing off if you wear it. Man, they have their own foundry. They cast their own metals, like. This is
which goes to show
just any brand. This is insane.
They're able to control all of their means of production. Exactly. So maybe that's where the money is because steel is so cheap for them. Gold's getting more expensive. Yeah. I don't know. Another one that jumped out at me, big concern, Richemont IWC experienced 13% decline in sales, estimated at 726 million Swiss francs. So I guess this is another one where they're culprits of, I guess, poor pricing.
Yep.
Engineer is a good example of that, where direct competitors like Omega and Breitling were offering much more competitive value propositions. So I think that's important.
And it's interesting to see that. I think we were talking about how, let's say, micro brands, which probably, you know, it's not fair to call them micro brands anymore, like Baltic. It's, you know, it's a full on huge brand that sells close to 100,000 watches per year or something.
Did they get
that
high? I didn't know. Whereas, that, you know, that's crazy.
I think it was 60 or 70.
Yeah, I think they were at 50. 50 to 60 was the one, I think, last October when we spoke to them or something like that. Insane.
Insane. It just goes to show that, like, micro brand isn't the proper word,
no.
I think, to
Cartier
used to refer to those.
Cartier watches slightly underperformed their jewelry, but they increased by 8% in sales to get to 3.1 billion Swiss francs compared to the jewelry, which improved by 11%. But I think that it's doing quite well. The average in the market was 5 points, and the Cartier outperformed it and got up to 8%. And Cartier's retail market share surpassed that of Omega for the first time, getting to 7.54%, while Omega's at 7.49%. So that was interesting as well.
The other thing that I thought was quite interesting is he touched on Tudor a little bit.
Tudor.
Saying how Tudor didn't really grow at all.
No.
In the last year. And
after having a number of really good years.
It's diminishing returns. Yeah. You can't continue growing at that same speed, right?
Exactly.
At some point, you have to peak and you have to plateau a little bit.
Right.
It doesn't say, nothing, and he kind of emphasized that as well. There's nothing against Tudor. It's not like they're going to crash or anything. It's just that the period of growth, the insane growth that they've demonstrated in the last few years, is probably coming to an end.
Absolutely. And you saw that with Breitling, with George Kern's reign. They had excellent returns in the last couple of years, but they stalled for this year. The brand barely reached growth in 2023 with only 1% growth and a minus for the volumes. Tag Heuer declined by 7%, Tudor 4% after growth in the last couple of years. Longines minus 6%, but that one apparently is linked to a weak Chinese market. IWC minus 13.
Swatch.
But then Swatch Group went crazy, man. Swatch just did really, really well because, let's see here, Swatch had an overall decline.
1.5 million in sales.
Yeah. That's, it sold over 2 million units of the Moonswatch last year alone. So the success accounted for 73% of the brand sale for 660 million Swiss francs. A remarkable 63% year over year. It's crazy. And the PRX family did quite good when it opened to the Chinese market. So 14% growth in the top line revenue, reaching 825 million Swiss francs. That's quite remarkable.
Is this report available somewhere online?
Yeah, you can get
for
it.
For our listeners to see?
Yeah, you can go get it at Morgan Stanley. If you look up the Morgan Stanley 2023 Swiss watch, I think you can find it.
Not to be confused with Stanley Cups, right?
Or Morgan Freeman. You're not going to find them. But I think that's going to be important to see what's going to happen in the future. A few things that jumped out at me, I wanted to share that Hermès grew 11% in Swiss francs and gained two ranks, becoming number 16. That was pretty interesting. Hermès is someone to be mindful for in terms of their watchmaking. We've been talking about them. They're coming out with some really great stuff. And it's really been the year of the independent brand. We're seeing three independent brands getting into the top 50: FP Jaune, Moser, and Grupo Forzi. That's quite interesting, but they don't have much of the market share at all. But they're starting to peek through. So yeah, that's what I really want. I think that's quite interesting to some of the takeaways that we saw in that report. I thought it was quite good thing to keep an eye on. But the market is still booming for Swiss watchmaking. It had a record year.
And for anybody listening, if you are interested in seeing the stats for different watch brands, because obviously we didn't touch on all of them, revolutionwatch.com has an article about this Morgan Stanley review, and you can find screenshots of, let's say, different sales numbers for all kinds of Swiss brands.
Definitely.
Very interesting. Like I didn't know, let's say, for example, that, you know, like companies like Glashütte Original, you know, they're very small, right? 16,000 units per year, right? Bill & Ross is one of the lowest ones, actually, 13,600.
It's very low, yeah.
And even Zenith, oh my God, 12,000 watches per year.
It's not a lot
A lot. I mean, again, not a lot, obviously, in terms of famous Swiss watch brands, but obviously 12,000 by itself is a big number. I think it's a good time to stop this because it's been quite a long episode and action-packed with a lot of information.
We hope you guys enjoyed it. If you have any feedback, let us know. If it's positive, please do. If it's negative, keep it to yourself.
Yeah, just
lock it up.
Just keep it yourself. Bottle it up, throw it in the garbage.
Lock it up.
Yeah. We want none of this.
On that note, we'll see you on the next episode.
Cheers, everybody.
Thank you for joining us this week. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you like our podcast, please make sure to like and subscribe. You can find us on Instagram at Big Black Clock Watch and through email at info@bigblackclock.watch. Happy hunting, and we will see you on the next episode.